Hello, and welcome to another episode of Reason Town. I'm your host, Jared Forsythe, and I'm very excited to have our first ever guest on Reason Town today, Cheng Liu. Welcome.
Hi, Jared. Thanks for inviting me here. Actually, this is my first podcast ever, so hopefully everything goes all right.
Fantastic. And many thanks to our Bandwidth sponsor, TylerMcGinnis.com, which is offers online courses for learning React and other technologies. So to start things off, Cheng, I see you as kind of a steward of the Reason Project, and that's why I wanted to get you on here so early, because you have a lot of perspective over how Reason has developed and where it's going. But how would you describe your role as relates to Reason?
Yeah, so I really like the word you chose, which is steward. So to be clear, I am not the inventor of Reason. Jordan is the inventor of it, and even saying that it's an invention might be kind of a stretch, in the sense that, you know, Reason borrows a lot from OCaml, and we just put our own layer of coding over it and do the community work, etc. And so I think we should give due credit. So, but yes, because of my position, my unique position, I kind of have a broad overview of what Reason is from the community to the language to whatever future work we need to do. So I would say that I try to glue things together. So I might be the glue. I don't want to sound too pretentious either, but things don't go right, when there's some integration problem, when, for example, BuckleScript, which is almost made entirely by homeboy Bob Zhang. So when some of the integration doesn't go too smoothly, I can glue them together, and so that at the end we can present a coherent story for the newcomers and etc. And
that sounds like a great description.
I do lots of work also behind the scene in terms of let's say managerial work, even though I'm an individual contributor still. Unofficially, if you, I won't say it during the podcast, but you can ask me any of you ever meet me in real life about how the Reason Project actually goes under the hood. Sometimes it's very funny. Sometimes it's less funny. Sometimes it's a little bit painful. But I think for our project of this scope and interestingness, this will happen.
Sure.
For example, coordinated people has been really funny. Let's say. Making trade-off is it's one of the things that makes you grow up the most, I believe. I think one part of my belief is that what might separate a senior engineer from, let's say, a junior engineer, beside a year of experiences and all of that, is the fact that a senior engineer can make the cost analysis much better than someone who just otherwise got started. So attempting to make these trade-offs and say, well, you know what, this is great and all, but we might not be able to do it. This has been a very maturing process for me.
Yeah, sounds like it. As I see it, the Reason Project has put a lot of focus on trade-offs, and we'll talk about that in a little bit. But first, I wanted to ask, how did you end up in this position as a steward of Reason? Like you said, Jordan kind of came up with it originally. How did you get involved?
So like all these things, like you, the plan starts very early on, and then at one point it kind of... enough things come together, there's a sudden exponential growth in terms of how realistic things become. And for me, it's basically, I started working on React a little bit, not as nearly as much as the current React members. I was just working on it a little bit, and that's how I got hired, actually, by using React in open source very early on. And that's how I came into touch with Jordan.
Okay.
And so we've been Jordan and I have been talking on and off on related topics for a long time now. So I would say at least 4 years. Since the beginning of the React open sourcing, basically. And Jordan always had these ideas around, and sometimes some of his ideas really takes years to concretize. You just got to be patient, I guess. And how I got into Reason specifically was after doing React stuff, I went on to do a little bit of Messenger.com stuff. And there was just a big discrepancy between what you learn on the React team and what you see people actually do on a, you know, on a real concrete, real life, dirty product, let's say. And I mean dirty in the sense that, you know, it's not, sometimes you don't get to have these nice pristine abstractions. Sometimes you got to get work done. There's a deadline that, you know, the React team might not have. And there are also other constraints. For example, you need to onboard newcomers, right? You do want newcomers, but newcomer by definition don't understand most of the thing you're talking about. And when they ship a feature, it looks completely different than what you thought it would be initially. And after a while, I just felt like, I just felt like it's good. It's good for me, you know. It's good for me that I know what's going on and that I can ship a feature. But some of the part of the code base, you know, the moment I am gone, it's very hard to see to predict how things are going to work out.
Sure.
And that was so I did a few internships at Facebook because of my visa conditions and whatever. And it gives me a pretty unique perspective in the sense that I was working on the Messenger code base and then I went back to school. After coming back to the Messenger product on the specific section I wrote and seeing all that new code being piled on top of it and seeing how it bridges to the original code I wrote, you realize there's a lot of miscommunication. There's a lot of just, you know, newcomer mistakes and lots of even experienced people mistakes or just simply miscommunication, right? And you realize it's bigger than you. It's not just about,
yeah,
it's not just about how you can make a product good and all. It's about how you can how lasting this is and how you can help other make similar products. And to be fair, like I think I'm fluent enough in JavaScript that if you ask me to write just a product, one-shot product, I don't know if I need Reason that much, right? If you ask me just make a mini chat app and we'll never modify the code base again, sure, I'll just whip up a JavaScript app and get work done. But unless you're doing that, and if you really want your code to be maintainable for the people after you, you know, you gotta that perspective really allowed me to understand that I can't just say for myself that, you know, types are not that useful for myself because it's for other people that I'm writing the code.
Okay, yeah, it sounds like this is another aspect of kind of maturing as a software engineer, where at the start you think, oh, source code is a language for a programmer to communicate with the computer. And then as you go along, you realize actually the most important communication is from the programmer who wrote it to the programmer who's modifying it later. And then it's only secondarily for a computer to execute.
And if you have a visualization of that, at the beginning it was basically one person talking to a computer, right? With potentially a few other people in the room also listening to that person talking to a computer, or maybe come into the room after the fact to stretch a metaphor a little bit and see what the initial person has transcribed onto the computer. And more nowadays, it's you have a room of people and you're talking to them more than you're talking to the computer.
Yeah.
And so I will give you an actual example of this that I don't think people realize much. At one point, I shipped some JavaScript code, and it was you look at the diff, and it was clean and pristine, and you landed. And the process from writing up that diff and landing it took 2 days for whatever reason. And then it bugs in production, and you don't understand why. Or maybe it bugs in production, and someone finds out 1 month later. And funnily, I found out that I think this really drives the point home, even if my diff is clear and all beautiful and all, someone else at that time, before I landed that diff, has concurrently landed another diff that didn't interact well with mine.
Sure.
So and in a code base, especially at a Facebook code base size where you have thousands of diffs per day, It's hard to debug just by looking at your own diff because the fault wasn't in mine. It was in some kind of miscommunication. So it's funny because I think Reason has prevented at least like 30 or more bugs that are result of simply this concurrent aspect of code writing that people, I don't think people acknowledge much. The fact that you have two diffs landing at the same time, or people working in a heterogeneous system, let's say.
Yeah. So you're saying that as you were working at Facebook and you saw kind of these bugs that come just from miscommunication between people, that's one of the things that stood out to you about Reason, that it has the chance to stop more of this and kind of help that communication be better?
Yes. So the way Reason catches this bug is very easy. You do a final round of centralized type checking somewhere in the continuous integration process. So you do catch all these bugs. Mm-hmm. That's the technicality of it. But and it's definitely about communicating to people. And I think I do. I also have some stats on concretely how much of the communication is going through, and how many how many interns has been able to contribute to the code base, how many bootcampers, etc. And so far, if I'm not mistaken, the bootcampers and intern have committed zero bug into the Reason code base.
Wow. Yeah, let's talk about that. So, because you're still working on the messenger.com code base for part of your job, right?
Yes, and the time I spend on messenger.com proper and on Facebook chat app and some related product might vary, but it's actually a very crucial part of how I start iterating on things like Reason React. So every mm-hmm. Reason React feature that we ship out so far has been very stable, and it doesn't come from us magically, thinking in our own ivory tower, like, what do the other programmers want? It actually comes from the fact that Ricky and I and Cristiano and Jordan all iterate on the code base, and we tell ourselves, is this good enough now? Is this good enough? So every Reason React feature right now has been extensively tested on the Messenger code base. Yes. And including the new BuckleScript features too. So when we release it, we know that there's a bar of quality that that's at least satisfying to something like Messenger. So I am reminded of something that Steve Jobs said at one point. He's basically said you got to work from the product backward. And so this is exactly what we've been doing. We start from a product, work backward. We are also on other products now. So we start from another product, work backward. And then we unify, synthesize, and make an API, go back to the code base, remove the old API, blah, blah, blah. And then we do a new feature release.
I like that. I like that quote. And I think that really comes out in when you're working with Reason and seeing the new APIs that you'll come out with. It feels very, very grounded, right? Where it's like, this is based on reality. We're doing this because of real things we've seen, not just things that we expect people will see.
Yeah, and to be clear, some people might also defend the other way around of doing things to think from, for example, first principle, top down.
Sure.
I shouldn't omit to say this, but we definitely do top down decision making too. It's just that in reality, in a practical engineering application, it's already very easy to do top down versus bottom up. Top down, everybody can do it. I can sit in my chair and think of a new Reason React API. Definitely do that. But bottom up is basically your validation. And so I'm just trying to put an emphasis on the fact that you do need to do bottom up. You can't just go top down all the time.
Yeah. So let's dig into the philosophies behind Reason and kind of the ideologies that you think Reason is striving for. One of them is bottom up and going from the concrete to the abstract. What else is there?
Well, right. And once again, just to make sure that people understand my point, we do bottom up because we already know how to, we already do top down. It's the bottom up part that's usually missing in these kind of languages and projects. So
sure. So a balance between both, I guess.
So, right. It's a balance that we're trying to strive for. And this is part of our philosophy. And, this question is very, I always have a hard time answering it, especially And in particular, for example, if someone asks me, oh, what do you foresee for Reason in the next 5 years? And honestly, I don't know. And at the beginning, I felt like this is a cop-out for me and that I'm not doing enough of a good job trying to guide the community to some places. And then I realized it was actually fine. It was very fine. And there's an expression called follow your nose. And this is exactly what we've been doing for the past 2 years or so. And for the past 2 years, there are lots of things that, you know, that we envisioned that did not work out at all. And there are some new opportunities that we that are in our peripheral vision that we picked up and that became a central part of what Reason is. And I'll give you one very real example, BuckleScript. BuckleScript was in our peripheral vision for more than 2 years, actually. And Reason's goal initially was actually different. But, you know, when we saw BuckleScript and we realized, wow, you can actually onboard a community so easily through this JavaScript, through this nice JavaScript story. And then, you know, we can also unshelve the native story and start working on that in parallel. You know, this resulting in what you see today. And there are also a few other items in our peripheral vision right now that maybe I'll talk about another time.
Okay.
Reason is indeed also about striking that sweet spot of 20% of the effort for 80% of the value. We think this is a way for us to gain more popularity while staying as a small team, right? Because if you visualize the curve of how much effort it takes for something, it's not linear, definitely not. It begins like, you know, you put 20% of the effort, and on the y-axis you already get 80% of the result, and the rest is grunt work.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to make these trade-offs very carefully. So, for example, what's the story for, say, testing or documentation or Reason React's API or Reason syntax or BuckleScript, right? And the harder part afterward is to actually make sure that you go back to these sweet spots and evaluate them after a amount of time. And I think this is what a lot of projects actually fail to do, is that they stay in that sweet spot and when a few years pass and everybody have moved on, they forget to come back and reconsider that sweet spot. It might not be a sweet spot anymore, right? And some of the stuff we do right now, we're very aggressively cannibalizing our work in the past. Because we deem that, you know, it's no longer a sweet spot. We need to provide 100% of the effort there. And documentation was one such thing. In the beginning, documentation was very easily writable by just, for example, Jordan himself or me or Bob. And then you realize it's not good enough anymore. You can't just be like, oh, we're going to spend 20% of the effort on it for 80% of the effort. The community gets big. The community gets all... goes global, and there are like meetups everywhere, and I get PM'd lots of time every month at least from people who told me that they thank me for translating Reason to, well, not me, but they thank the community for translating the Reason doc into other languages, you know, you no longer get to stay in that sweet spot. So that's why we jumped out of it. That's why we spent a crazy amount of effort doing the documentation, trying to do them correctly, trying to unify the fact that, you know, there's really a Reason documentation, an OCaml documentation, a BuckleScript documentation, and who knows what a Reason React documentation, and who knows what comes next. There's going to be some unifying perspective on this. Otherwise, I don't have too much of a philosophy besides following your nose and see what opportunities come up and adapt yourself to them like we have done so far.
Yeah. Well, so one thing that stands out to me about the Reason project is it seems like it's very focused on being onboarding friendly, making it as easy as possible, sometimes at the expense of, you know, this would be more effort or, you know, it wouldn't necessarily benefit advanced users as much, but it would really make a difference to people that are just starting out. A big example of that was the major syntax upgrade that happened last October. Could you talk about that?
I would like to put an emphasis on this. I am extremely proud of the community right now and at that time. For lots of people, and they come to me and they tell me, and even today, actually, even this week, they come and tell me, you know what, I disagree with the syntax change, but I understand how this is better for us in general. So I'm going to go with it. And same for some of the decisions we're making in the future in Reason React and in BuckleScript's new belt. And I am just extremely proud of that, because this is the hard part of scaling a community. The easy part is, you know, just dump some code outside and say, well, you folks figure out, right? This is an easy way to scale a community. I don't consider that really as a scaling community. The community is a very distributed thing. There's no, you know, many people have different opinions, but to come together, from this decentralized nature, to come together to make a centralized design decision and to be okay with it and to push for it together. This is, I think this is something that some other community can only ever hope for, and we have it, and we should be very lucky.
That's awesome.
Regarding beginner friendliness, I have a few very precise way to consider what is beginner friendly and how to proceed to making architecture that's beginner friendly, making tools that are beginner friendly. So first we need to overload the word beginner, the word newcomer, because especially in the situation for Reason, the word newcomer is very overloaded. So are they new to programming, or are they familiar and maybe expert in JavaScript but new to Reason? Or
sure,
are they OCaml veterans who don't know about Reason and who just heard about it and want to get started? You know, that's three very different categories.
Right.
We are we want to cater to all three, and sometimes we need to make compromises to make sure that all three groups of newcomers are welcomed. So for OCaml veterans, I think, you know, like all our work into the BuckleScript, all of Bob's work in BuckleScript, they benefit the OCamlers. For people who are expert JS users who are new to Reason, you know, you give them the syntax, and you give them a tool chain that's basically just npm and some other good integrations like Reason React. Look at the documentation; it basically just refers to React JS, right? We're not rewriting the entire React JS documentation.
Right.
We're just very thinly putting our layer on top to explain the basics and all of that. And for newcomer who are who come from a different background, and we do have quite a few of them in the community, then you need a different approach. So, for example, better error message, you know, and at the end, it comes down to a rather uncomfortable compromise. it is very uncomfortable. It's a big trade-off you have to make, because what is beginner friendly would be for us to create, for example, a create Reason app script, a create Reason app project, right? And you know, one click, get started. It's easy. You have hot reloading and everything like that. But if you ask everyone to use this project, this become extremely unfriendly for the JS beginners who are actually JS experts, and they already have their own create React app or their own setup. How are they going to adopt this into their company? It's very unclear. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the one thing I can think of that actually satisfy all three of these is to just try not to do too much when the time is not ready. Try to keep it thin. If you can give a good unifying story for everyone in the newcomer community, might as well keep it thin. So, for example, our BSB init template is very thin, and you open it up and you realize, oh well, this is it. You know, there's not much to it. You just polish that.
Sure.
And also it helps a lot for this one part I care about a lot, which is how does a newcomer transition into a seasoned programmer? This is something I care a lot about. And if you give them like this opaque magical abstraction that is create Reason BuckleScript app or create Reason native app, and it's one click. By definition, somewhere in there, like you might be invisibly, preventing them from growing by allowing them to look into how the stack actually works and how to diagnose bugs for themselves, how to make sense of the type errors that we can't cover all of them, right? And how for them to fork into a different understanding of reason. And this is something that's lacking if you make one single, you know, magical, super polished beginner boilerplate for the entire community.
Right. Yeah. Because by definition, you would be hiding complexity. And then they wouldn't have the opportunity to engage with that.
Which is great if you can actually hide it away completely, right? But our community is pretty heterogeneous. So you got to make do. You got to do the best you can. And I think we're in a pretty good place in terms of beginner friendliness. Of course, there's always work to be done. Like, for example, the BuckleScript interop is very comprehensive. And sometimes it's pretty scary for a newcomer, right?
Yeah.
For me, I love the fact that there's just, you know, you can bind to any piece of JavaScript code you can imagine, but how do you make this actually friendly to, for example, newcomer who are from who don't know JS?
Right. Well, so you've mentioned Reason React a couple of times now. Could you tell us a little bit about what's coming down the pipe? I'm sure many of us watched Dan Abramov's talk at JSConf Iceland, where he demoed kind of the future of React, kind of beyond React 16. What's coming in Reason React?
Okay, so to answer the easy question, Reason React is can easily move to React Async. That's not a problem, and we actually talk to the React team a lot regarding this.
Cool.
And the actual concrete changes that need to be made is to move also to there's a thread on React request for comments that tells you how to move off the old React API and some old lifecycle methods like component with receive props. So we're going to be making the same changes with a code mod, etc., to make sure that you don't get churned too hard. I care a lot about this. And so async will be ready. And as far as we know, there's nothing in Reason React specifically that prevents async from happening. We are actually, like I said before, we are going to test async extensively on Messenger to make sure that it lives up to our claim. Aside from that, I think what we're going to do with Reason React is very in the spirit of what we've done when we released that little router utility. I can't even call it a real router, right? Because if you check the code, it's like 30 lines. But it's
right.
Yeah. So this is the kind of thing we want to do to make sure that, you know, we're not going to be super opinionated and dictate a centralized solution for routing. And this is it. You get to only use that. If you use something else, it's not going to play well. Or we're going to lay a layer on top exactly according to our principle of, like, you know, a 20% of the energy for 80% of the benefit. And I really
right.
think that the current router exemplifies that in terms of implementation and let's say polish. And I do want to put an emphasis on polish, because people think, you know, 30 lines of code, this is very easy to write. It took me 2 weeks to write because I had to dive back into exactly, and also I had to go through 5 different APIs or so, or 4. Because you have to dive back into the React paradigm and realize, you know, can you model this as a component? What about did mount? What about will mount, which we don't support? Subscription, is that going to work out? And you know, what's the performance characteristic and interrupt story? So basically, for this router in particular, I literally went through, I collected every single Reason React router blog post at that time, and I read through them and looked at the use cases and synthesized one that
wow.
basically satisfied. Yeah. So in case you think I'm not reading your Reason React blog post or whatever, I'm reading most of them as much as I can. And so it's a funny way of iterating, but it's been working out pretty well for us. So
yeah.
Routing, I would consider that temporarily solved. And this is a sweet spot for now. And we're going to come back to it maybe later on when you know the situation changed, or for example maybe async has different implication for the router. I don't think so, but we'll see. And so concretely, what's going to come next is maybe some testing utilities.
Cool.
And this is we have some pretty funny idea for testing that we're actually currently trying on the code base. And from a first look of it, I'm very excited about it. So just as always, you know, like I will show you the code later when we actually pull it off. But right now, it does have
sure.
has a Reason React router feeling, in the sense that it's really not that much code, and it gets the job done, and I'm pretty proud of it. And maybe doing something with the event stuff, or maybe do accessibility internationalization, and maybe even look into form or maybe styling. Styling is a subject that's, let's just say, very churny at the moment.
Right.
So I'm very afraid to touch it. And the more libraries there are, the less I'm decisive I am of giving an authoritative solution. So, but we'll see what happens.
Okay. Awesome. Now, you said near the beginning that when people ask you about the future of Reason, you don't have much to say. But I do want to ask you, what do you see in the next 6 months?
Right. It's much easier for me to talk about this. Thanks. Concretely, we will have a very exciting thing coming up that lots of people wanted, and that is a better flow and maybe TypeScript integration. Currently, we're focusing on the flow integration because it's Facebook uses it.
Right.
It's very tricky to get this right. There's a lot of build system related concern and lots of integration concern and buckle script concern. So this integration will get better in the way you think it is, basically. And and we will also, in our typical way, maybe make a specific integration for Reason React too. So you will have your generalized version of a lossy conversion, right? Because types don't convert over bidirectionally correctly. This is not a solvable problem.
Right, yeah, because Flow has types that Reason can't express and vice versa.
You know, if Reason types and Flow types or TypeScript types or whatever other type are all interchangeable, why are you even doing Reason, right? Well, maybe you're doing it for the polish or the community or something. I don't know, but on a fundamentally, there's a types, and I would like to talk about a little bit about this later. But fundamentally, you cannot evaluate a type system by just going through a laundry list of features and counting the length of the features, basically.
Right.
So we will. So in the case of Reason React interop with Reason. Reason React interop with React.js. I think we're in a pretty nice place right now, but we can actually auto-generate some of these interop boundaries, which will be nice.
Yeah.
I would like to have a better JSON story. Right now, BSJSON has been very useful for us, but maybe something auto-generated will be cool there too. Maybe you'll just directly generate BSJSON or maybe something else. I don't know yet. Documentation generation would be nice too. These kind of things, I think that if the listener is interested, they should come to us and ping us directly because these things are rather centralized. It's very hard to just throw it out in the community and hope that something will come out of it and you just take that solution. It doesn't work very well. So I'd rather if we talk together and have a more nuanced discussion about these issues. And last but not least, there is the promise story.
Yeah.
The promise story. Promises. What can you do about them? Everybody used them and it satisfied a very good use case. So we're definitely going to try to satisfy this better with some async away sugar maybe. But ultimately, we also want to make sure that we don't neglect callbacks either. I have my own motivation for making sure that we have a good fallback to callback. But we can discuss this another time and maybe I should write it down somewhere too.
Yeah, that could be a good blog post.
Yeah, and of course, when we talk about Reason, we're also talking about buckle script. On the buckle script side, we will be doing the upgrade soon to a new OCaml version. So for us, it doesn't change much in terms of user experience, except the fact that you will get inline record, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, inline record inside a varying constructor, not inline record. And also, we will be testing very extensively testing the new addition to the existing standard library, which is shared with OCaml. The newest addition being under the namespace belt. And
right.
There are a couple of data structures there I'm extremely excited about. And I've been keeping it a surprise for 2 weeks, but we have some blog posts coming up regarding this subject. But I actually believe some part of belt, if done just right, is as much of a value proposition than Reason the entire syntax itself. More on that in 2 weeks.
Wow, that's bold. All right, well, we'll be excited to see that. I've been watching, and I think kind of typical Hongbo, the data structures seem to be very performant.
Oh, yeah. Well, performance is... we don't even talk about performance when we talk about BuckleScript anymore because it's such a given. But sometimes you realize, no, it's not a given at all. These data structures are well, documentation-wise, we need to polish them. Right now, it's just generated docs. But if you sure. only think about the theory behind them, it's actually pretty surprising, pretty intriguing, especially when you log that data structure. When you JS log that data structure, it gives you a feeling of the first time you actually see the JS output from BuckleScript. You in the sense that you log that data structure output and you suddenly realize how immutability works. So right now you can just start a node repo and directly use the JS artifact and create a few set items or map items, and you log them, and it's you suddenly realize how the whole entire thing works, and that looks simple in appearance, but it's extremely hard to pull off. And I would like to think that Bob has pulled off for the most part, and it's been very great to see him doing that.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we'll be excited for that blog post coming in a couple of weeks. What are some you mentioned community contributions? What are some top level things that you would like people to start working on, start thinking about, or contributing?
So last time it was actually internationalization, which is the area that's admittedly not exciting for people to contribute to, but people mm-hmm. did, and this is where we can leverage the massive parallelization that is our community, where you know internationalization doesn't require much of a centralized decision making. You make a French version, you make a Chinese version, etc. And so yeah. Reason docs, for example, in French and Chinese and Japanese and Russian, they're pretty legit. Spanish too.
Wow.
Yeah, and this is the best part of the community. This is where it shines, right? It's the massive parallelization, and for most of the centralized decision for that affects the design, the foundation of BuckleScript and Reason. I would rather, again, you ping us or post somewhere in the forum, and I will give a more nuanced direction. But in general, I would actually love the community to go out and write products with them. This helps us a lot. This helps us a lot in the sense that, in the same sense that the messenger conversion, which was which was at 50% when the blog post released, in the sense that kind of things really convince, for example, managers, right? When they don't know the technicality of it, none of your technical argument will work. You cannot justify BuckleScript. Right. You cannot justify the setup experience. You cannot justify the Reason syntax or whatever type semantic, because by definition they might not understand about it. But they do understand how much of a vote of confidence it is if other companies are picking it up. And so far we have lots of companies picking them up and saying to our community, this is working out, and this is the thing that will scale Reason, I think.
There you go. Awesome. Well, that's a good call out to close on. Thank you so much for being on our podcast. I think we talked about lots of really interesting things, and we've got more to come.
All right. Thanks.